Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly.
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. Lots to talk about today in Toker Talk Radio. Because I got to admit it, man. My social media feeds, Facebook comments, Twitter feed, they've been coming down on both sides of this issue. This is not a clear-cut issue for a lot of people. This issue of John Boehner getting involved, right? Even in our chat room right now, we've got people discussing this. Arden says, the reason shouldn't matter at all. The past is the past. If you attack people for changing, less people are apt to change. What is the motivation for a prohibitionist to change his stance on legalization if when he does, he's just going to get shit on? That's a valid point. I understand where you're coming from on that. And here's the thing. Like I said, it's you know, saying, why should they have to apologize for the past? The past is the past. Well, that, I think, is one of our problems in America, is we don't reconcile the past. We don't hold people accountable for the past. We got too much of this, oh, well, let's just move on. Let's just forget about it. Let's not rehash it. This goes all the way back to Nixon and Watergate. Oh, let's pardon Nixon. We don't want to have to go through the problem of having a president being tried and, let's not deal with it. Let it bygones be bygones, right? How much different would this country be if Nixon had been held to account? If Nixon had to go to trial? If we showed that in America, even the president is subject to the rule of law in the most extreme manner? I mean, I think that successive, especially Republican presidents, have been emboldened since Nixon to realize, oh, shit, I can do whatever I want. I'm not really going to go to jail. Nobody's really going to do anything unless it's a blowjob from an intern. Then, oh, no, we'll go right into gear on that one. I mean, would Trump be doing what he's doing now if he knew that, like, hell, they put Nixon in prison for 5 years, for God's sake, or whatever it ended up being, right? But no, it's all, we got to look beyond it. We got to get beyond it. Obama did it with George W. Bush and the torture and the lying us into war. Nobody was held to account. Now, I had a commenter on my Twitter feed that reported, hey, Russ, the reason we don't do that is, you know, it's kind of third worldy. It's kind of banana republic for the next administration to imprison all the prior administration. And I get that point, but doesn't there have to be some point at which we're holding people accountable? Doesn't torture clear the bar? Doesn't lying the country into war clear the bar? I just frustrating. So I understand that point. I understand this point of people that are saying, hey, look, let's not shit all over John Boehner. Let's not dredge up the past. Let's not go over how much he was a drug warrior. As long as he's right now, as long as he's on the right side now, and this is a utilitarian approach. This is a very, you know, practical, pragmatic approach. It's like, hey, this has made huge headlines on CNBC and Bloomberg and all the financial and the right wing and the upper crust, you know, elite type of news media. This could change a lot of those people's minds. If Boehner's on board, shit, we better get on board, right? So there's a very practical aspect to that. And so in that sense, I'm happy about it. I'm excited about that. But I'm not going to call him my friend. I'm not going to call anybody who does not apologize to me for trying to lock me up, for supporting locking me up. Unless I get that apology, you're not my friend. I'll accept you as an ally. Accept you as an ally, but I'm not going to promote you, right? And at the end of that rant, I, you know, kind of hinted at boycotting. I'm going to. I'm not going to spend my money to enrich drug warriors if they have not repented. Now, there's another question. Has he repented? Has just joining this company and admitting he's for decriminalization or descheduling, I should say, is that repentance enough? Need he go back and specifically address his own culpability? I think so. I want an apology. I want these people to not just be in this mistakes were made. I want them to say, look, we were wrong. I want John Boehner to come out and say, look, I had a chance. In, you know, Barney Frank and others were telling me in 2011 that this was the right thing. And I wasn't there. I didn't understand. But now I've learned. Now I've understood. Now I've recognized what medical marijuana can do. Now I understand how marijuana is a tool of racist law enforcement. Now, had he come out and said those kind of things? If he'd say something like that, then you could get the sense that, okay, you are on board, right? When Tommy Chong talks about Boehner being on board, what's he on board of? He's on board with making money. And what happens if the money goes away? What happens if the winds shift again, politically speaking? They'll be off board? I want to know that the people who are making the money aren't just on board with making the money. They're on board with ending the arrest. They're on board with legalization. They're on board with ending mass incarceration. And it's awfully nice to him to be on board. I wonder if he's on board with releasing some of these pot prisoners who were arrested between 2011 and 2015. That's what I need to hear. And you know, this just goes... in my post today on RadicalRust.com, I put together a picture. I went to acreageholdings.com, and looked up their team. I couldn't find their board, but I could find their team, their executive team. 24 pictures, 23 white people. Yeah. And my caption was, John Boehner will fit in just fine, right? Because that's the underlying issue here. That's the undercurrent of all of this discussion. Is something Cynthia Nixon said when she said that, you know, marijuana has been legal, effectively legal for white people for a long time. It's this blacks did time, whites make dimes. It's this Reconstruction era of the new Jim Crow. It's this system that's, you know, exacerbating the problems, you know, the racist law enforcement that we had is now becoming racist business practice in effect. Because the law enforcement made it so that the black folks had the criminal records, and now the criminal records keep you from getting the business license. Or the institutionalized racism of housing, redlining, home ownership, homesteading, all this legacy of racism in Jim Crow prevented blacks from being able to secure the wealth necessary or the credit necessary to clear the high bars, the acreage holdings can to get four of Maine's dispensary licenses, one of Connecticut's. You know, Connecticut's dispensary license, you had to show like you had, what was it, $1 million on hand, $2 million on hand. I mean, people can come up with that, right? So I hear you. I hear folks on this issue that say, you know, welcome them in. And so I'm going to come at it with like, I'm not going to kick them out, but y'all can welcome them in. Y'all can say, hey, John Boehner, you're a great guy. Now that you support our side, yay, you're on our side. But I know that tiger ain't changed its stripes yet. I know what's really going on down in there. And it's an interesting point. And again, my Twitter feed, if you follow me at Radical Russ, there's all sorts of discussion going on about this. Strange times we're living in when Nixon's for weed, Boehner's for weed, evangelicals are for a pussy grabbing porn star fucking president. Evil Spock is going to beam down with a goatee any minute now. Got to take a break. We'll be right back. Stick around.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Russ channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/radicalruss. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
No, Nelson, that's illegal. I can smoke this because I have cancer.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Hi, my name is Ricky Williams.
My name is Evan Britton.
My name is Mark Costelli.
My name is Boo Williams.
My name is Jim McMahon.
My name is Chris Cluey.
My name is Kyle Turley. I played in one of the major North American football leagues.
I have 2 championship rings from that big game we play at the end of the season.
In college, I won a trophy that looks like this.
I was a punter for 8 seasons, and punters are football players too.
I also wrote the name of the commissioner on my headband, and everyone lost their shit.
The men who play American football are subject to a life of injury,
pain,
and disease,
both during and long after their careers are over.
And that's why I smoke pot.
That's why I smoke cannabis.
That's why I smoke weed. That's why I smoked weed when I played.
It has, without a doubt, reduced the amount of pain I live with.
It's my body. I know.
But for some reason, the major North American non-Canadian football league refuses to allow players to use cannabis.
Instead of allowing for safe, natural healing, the sport pushes players towards addictive, narcotic painkillers with serious side effects.
So let's get real, Roger.
Football players should be allowed to use medicinal marijuana.
Without the stigma of it being a banned substance.
Cannabis isn't a drug.
It is a medicine.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
Of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. Looking over the chat room here at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/RadicalRuss. And I love John Thomas out there. Republicans are more shameless than Democrats, so they're ready to jump the ship faster. I think, ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, look how quick Republicans went from Russia is the evil empire to, hey, it'd be great to be friends with Russia. Look how fast they went from deficits. Oh, my God, deficits are going to destroy this country to, hey, $1 trillion deficit. Ah, what the fuck? No big deal. $1 trillion. What's that between friends? So, yeah, you got a point. You got a really good point there. Cajun Aggie brings up the point that at least Sanjay Gupta apologized. Yes, we have another winner. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Recognizing the, and Gupta did it great. He came out and said, I recognize the role I played, not passive voice, active voice. I did this. I believed this. I was wrong. I harmed people. That's what we want. You want to take some of my money. You want to make some profit off of me. You got to at least acknowledge the effect that you had in my life, trying to put me in a cage for a plant. Going to sell me that plant, you got to admit that you were wrong. Not now that you're right, right? Don't, it's great that you're right now. I want you to admit you were wrong then. All right. So I want to go on talking a little bit more about these Democrats, because it's interesting. With Democrats, you got a situation where that party has to be broader than the Republican Party. Republican Party is a pretty homogeneous group, right? Pretty white, pretty straight, pretty Christian. Generally, you know, similarly culturally and a very authoritarian worldview, you know, top down. You know, everything has a certain order and a certain hierarchy, right? So they tend to be on the same page more, right? It's real hard finding like pro-life, pro-gun control Republicans, right? But on the left, on the Democratic side, you got a wide coalition. The immigrants and religious people and atheists and gays and lesbians and transgender people and every color and ethnicity and language and age. And so you have a party that has to somehow represent, you know, the Bernie Sanders side way over here on the left. Young and progressive, full of vim and vigor and liberals hell, not afraid of the word socialism. And that party also has to accommodate Dianne Feinstein, the 80-year-old senator from California, right? And you got the issue of so-called red state Dems, right? These conservative Dems, blue dog Dems, right? That are the kind that, you know, like a Joe Manchin in West Virginia, right? Just barely a Democrat, just barely somebody you call a Democrat. Here's Joe Manchin from West Virginia, his stance on recreational marijuana. This is from 2017.
What I know about just marijuana, recreational marijuana, I would not be in favor or support legalizing recreational marijuana.
So you can understand that, right? You can understand that reticence from a guy from West Virginia, you know, more rural conservative, tends to be Republican state, not willing to risk political capital on an issue like marijuana, right? You can understand it, right? It's frustrating, but it's understandable. What's not understandable is when you have a senator from California who's reticent to address this. A senator from California who you know, it's like, you know, Dianne Feinstein was the mayor of San Francisco, right? they've had medical marijuana in her state since 96. But still, Feinstein is just way far away from getting anywhere close to supporting marijuana legalization. Now, there's more hope if you look at the junior senator from California, Kamala Harris. And she was recently on, I forget whose program this was. And she talks a good talk about the marijuana issue.
I'm going to get mad when we have an attorney general who is trying to resuscitate the war on drugs.
Yes, can we talk about
that? And he thinks the greatest evil that mankind has ever seen is marijuana.
It's gateway.
Like, I've said this, and you've seen this in my emails. Yeah. Leave grandma's medical marijuana alone. Just leave it alone.
So that was Kamala Harris talking, you know, leave grandma's medical marijuana alone. She's tweeted about it many times. She's made a lot of statements about this, you know, supporting marijuana legalization, supporting reforms on it. But she, until recently, hadn't backed it up with action. You know, we got Senator Gillibrand, Senator Booker, Senator Paul, who are sponsoring these bills, like the CARERS Act, right, to make it states' rights for, you know, marijuana. She's not co-sponsored it. And in fact, as of January 2018, middle of January, she was not a co-sponsor of any marijuana-related bill in the Senate. The junior senator from California, often touted as being a potential 2020 presidential contender, it illustrates the timidity of the Democrats. I can just see the political calculus. Well, I don't want to be on the record of being co-sponsor of the Legalized Drugs Act. You know, the Republicans will use that as an attack ad in Kansas. They'll say that you want to legalize drugs. Yeah, better not co-sponsor that. I can just hear Democratic consultants saying that. I can just imagine it. But Kirsten Gillibrand and Cory Booker and now, you know, Cynthia Nixon in New York, they're leading on the issue. They understand, look, the public's at 64% on this. Even a majority of Republicans support legalization now. It's like 50, 51%. And anymore, if you're espousing these, you know, Andrew Cuomo, we need to fund a study. or a Hillary Clinton, medical marijuana needs more study. We need to study it. This kick the can down the road attitude is going to ring so fake to millennial voters.
But isn't marijuana or dope illegal? Only for those who enjoy it.
One of the things you can say about Republicans is you know what they stand for. It's wrong in many cases, but you know what it is. This kick the can, oh, gee, we need to study it. I don't know how we feel about it because it's just not enough data. That's what costs you elections, Democrats. You got to stand for something or you fall for anything. Happy 420, everybody.
The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at mjagenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Never find your precious blunt cave, did you, Hemp Knight?
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
This is Trey. This is crew. Here he is, what he do. Sitting here hugging the block and smoking weed. Hands spinning on the clock. Look at Trey. He never leaves. Just sit day and day and day and day. Do his time, listen to his man's rhyme. Tell him how to be a man. He listens out, but ain't got no plan. He only listens, never plays, never think, never say what he wants or what he needs. Just sit some more and smoke that weed. I wonder if he'll ever leave.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. Trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
This is A Sensible Future, brought to you by Students for Sensible Drug Policy at ssdp.org. Drug policy is an issue that primarily affects the young, both in terms of use and legal prosecution. SSDP believes in honest education about drugs and advocates for harm reduction policies to protect young adults and society at large. We speak with another dedicated activist from SSDP, working toward a sensible future.
Welcome to another edition of A Sensible Future, the podcast for students for sensible drug policy. Find out more at ssdp.org. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today, we have an SSDP member from UC Berkeley in California. Go Bears! It's Aaron Cobain joining us today. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, what's up, Russ? How you doing?
Doing good. So you're a current student at UC Berkeley. What year are you?
Yeah, I'm a senior at Cal in my last semester. I'm about to graduate.
Oh, okay. And so have you been with SSDP the whole time?
Yes. I've been an SSDP member since about my sophomore year, about three years ago. And ever since then, I've been an active member of SSDP.
So what attracted you to Students for Sensible Drug Policy?
So how my interest started with SSDP was like that. When I got into Cal, I'm originally from Southern California, the city of Compton, and I was born and raised in Compton. And when I came to Berkeley, at first I wasn't trying to find my zone, trying to fit in with the student organizations, but I didn't find a comfortable place where I felt comfortable talk about the things that I'm most interested about, which is mass incarceration and decriminalization and the war on drugs, right? And so in my time at Berkeley, I met one of the cool homies, Froggy Vasquez, who introduced us to Students for Sensible Drug Policy. He was a former member of Students for Sensible Drug Policy back in 2007. And it was me and a couple of homies of us who were basic Berkeley students, smoking pot on the weekends and stuff, and like talking about the issues on mass incarceration and the war on drugs, foreign policies that affect countries and countries abroad, right? Since then we started like organizing and talking and making this conversation legit, right? And So that's how I got involved, and also because of partnering up with all of us are known and underground scholars at the UC Berkeley. That gave us the center face for to the conversation about like mass incarceration and how that like the war on drugs related to mass incarceration, right?
So for this activism for you is broader than just the issue of drugs. It's getting into these larger criminal justice issues that we've been talking about.
Most definitely, and that's what makes us unique and a little bit different than other Students for Sensible Drug Policy chapters from the nation. Here, Students for Sensible Drug Policy at Cal, we are committed to ending the war on drugs, but this means we ending the repressive and colonial narrative that this government and all its allies around the world have imposed on the issues of the war, issues of drugs in order to carry out racist imperialist agenda. Mm-hmm. As a chapter, we look at the ways in which the drug war is used as a political tool to destabilize governments abroad and oppress and repress people, militarize police, and ensure stolen resources through the use of racist borders, laws, mm-hmm. and so-called nation states.
That is so good to hear, because, you know, being a student at Berkeley, I can imagine that, you know, the argument and the discussion about drug policy is a pretty easy one. Berkeley's kind of known as being that sort of place for free speech and free ideals. So the idea that you guys are expanding into the broader criminal justice issue, especially when we're talking about people of color, Latinos, African-Americans and so forth. And this issue of the colonialism, the repression that has happened in places like Honduras and Nicaragua and these other countries due to our drug policies. So as you are embarking on graduation, how do you intend to take your activism further beyond your SSDP chapter?
Well, as I'm heading to my graduation, I still want to be committed and continue organizing through community organizations and continue visiting SSDP at Cal to continue with the work that we've been doing. And for me, Students for Sensible Drug Policy isn't the only like organization that I'm involved with that focuses on the criminal justice system. Like as I mentioned before, All of Us Are Non or underground scholars that I've been involved with have particularly done work in the criminal justice system, from banding the box across all the UCs. And so this allows me to have a window of not of opportunity, but like of where to reach out, even though like I have graduated and continue with my activism.
What is your degree in?
I'm a geographer and a society and environment major, double majoring.
That's excellent. Now, for some of our listeners who might not be familiar with what the Ban the Box campaign is, tell them what that means at Berkeley, Ban the Box.
So the Ban the Box is that what it started with All of Us or None as a project to allow formerly incarcerated members who like recently got out to have a second chance and applying for jobs and not being discriminated because of their criminal record. Because sometimes when we apply to jobs and they ask us for a background checker and stuff, right? And like if you've been committed with felony, check this box. And that limits the person applying for a job to continue with the process, right? To the interview, and that sort of underground scholars here at Cal pressure the UCs to ban this box and give a second chance to formerly incarcerated members who are trying to get back in their legs and get an education higher education, right? And we were able to do this back in 2016, banning all the boxes around across the UCs, and that allows formerly incarcerated members, as I mentioned, to now be able to apply and continue with the further process where they're being interviewed and not like solely discriminated for their background.
Well, that's great work that you're doing with Ban the Box. And of course, All of Us or None is another great organization. We just saw them at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference, Dorsey Nunn and all the crew out there. Glad to hear that their work is making it out to the West Coast as well. Aaron from UC Berkeley, tell us if you've got any websites or Facebook pages or email addresses you'd like to give out, if you'd like to converse more with some of our listeners, or if they're looking for some more information on the topics you've been discussing.
Yeah, you could definitely check us out on Facebook, Students for Sensible Drug Policy at Cal. And you'll find our recent posts and events that are coming up. Just to mention that this Saturday, November 4th, we're having a mini regional Pacific conference where we're going to have universities from the Northwest Pacific come in. We'll be hosting the conversation, and we'll be talking about some issues of mass incarceration, like how is mass incarceration related to the war on drugs, and trauma and healing, like a harm reduction approach to the war on drugs, and other more, right? On Facebook, we have our page, Students for Sensible Drug Policy at Cal, and you can check us out there and hear more about us. And most definitely, we're always updating this our website. So if you're interested, check us out, and we'll definitely keep you posted with events and upcoming meetings.
All right. Well, get involved, and remember, you don't have to be going to UC Berkeley necessarily, do
exactly.
you, to be able to get this info?
No, you don't. You don't have to be to get the information. You don't. We also do work in the community. So it's always open to community members who are trying to get engaged in ending the war on drugs together.
That's fantastic. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us here today on the Marijuana Agenda, and good luck to you in the future.
Oh, thank you. Also, can I just mention the last brief point?
Sure. Yeah.
One of our main focus here at Cal under Students for Sensible Drug Policy is to also to focus on the war on drugs through Latin American Latin American perspective, and how the war on drugs and foreign policies are affecting countries in Latin America, right? And because we know that the war on drugs began right after the civil rights movement, and it's been a tool of oppression and racism, right? So we, in our part, we're trying to push and pressure the U.S. government in our part to continue. To dismantle this war on drugs approach that they have with law and order, and come up with an alternative. As I mentioned before, I've also been involved in other community organizations that we focus on. I don't know if you're familiar with the disappearance of the 43 students of Ayotzinapa in Mexico. We have gathered and met with some of the students, like Omar Garcia, and talked about ways of continuing pressuring the U.S. government to continue pressuring the Mexican government to continue with this investigation of the mass cases of disappearances that is happening in countries in Latin America, from Mexico to Honduras to Nicaragua to Colombia and El Salvador. And yeah, just, you know, and keep stay updated. Check us out on Facebook, if anything, to learn more about us and the work that we do around here.
All right. Well, Aaron, thank you for that additional information. We really appreciate it. And again, good luck on all this activism that you're taking on at such a young age. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rose.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey, everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
This is Radical Russ Belville with a word about stone driving. Numerous studies have shown that once you factor in age and gender, drivers with cannabis in their system have no statistically greater risk of motor vehicle crashes than sober drivers. But that doesn't mean you ought to be toking and driving. Those studies are referring to people with any amount of THC or metabolite in their system, not people who've just smoked marijuana. Simulators and observed demonstrations show that cannabis consumers do develop a tolerance to the impairing effects of marijuana and can perform driving tasks within an acceptable margin of safety. However, infrequent and novice consumers do not and cannot, and would be wise to never toke and drive. Even regular cannabis consumers should exercise caution before deciding to drive, as most state laws punish drivers harshly if they're discovered to have marijuana in their system.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Once more into the breach, because during our recorded segment, I got a chance to jump into the chat room, where once again I'm confronted with one of my biggest pet peeves. My biggest pet peeves about working for marijuana legalization. And that is the conspiracy thinking I have to deal with from both the left and the right. From people. It gets so frustrating. I have to go here so many times. But I'm going to go there again because it's all I can think about now. When you read things, I got to find this, this quote, because this is just something. This is just something. So first of all, the conversation began with the assertion that anyone who voted for Hillary Clinton after knowing that the DNC corruptly stole the Democratic Party, the primaries from Bernie Sanders, was then complicit in electing Donald Trump. This is the way, as Trump keeps crashing and burning and proving to be the worst president in our lifetimes ever, or worst president in the history of the country, as it continues to crash and burn, the most diehard of the third party voters are clinging to this idea that they can be absolved of any responsibility for Donald Trump wrecking this country, ruining the planet, destroying our democratic ideals, because they were the ones who did the right thing, not the people who voted for Hillary Clinton. And it comes down to something, a type of political naivete that we often get in freshman-type marijuana legalizers. It's a thing I call fairy buddy thinking. Fairy buddy. Fairy buddy thinking. Fairy buddy that we gave a petition to just turned in 100 signatures. While we'll get on the ballot, no problem. All volunteer. We'll legalize marijuana with an all volunteer crew. Fairy buddy just brings 100 signatures in. Oh, we'll be able to run ads. Fairy buddy on our friends list just donates $10. Fairy buddy just shows up. Fairy buddy that RSVP'd just shows up and donates $100. Well, we'll go far. Fairy buddy just votes third party. If they just vote their conscience and just ignore the Democrats or Republicans, if fairy buddy just did that, then you know, we'd magically fix the corrupt duopoly and all politics would be clean and wonderful, and we'd have socialized medicine and free healthcare and everything would be rosy and sunny. Fairy buddy did it. Well, here's the problem. Fairy buddy don't do it. It's the thing that just, it's just maddening to me that the ease with which people can blind themselves in this far left or far right conspiratorial type thinking. This commenter was going on about how Jill Stein would have beaten Trump and Clinton. Fool, she ran against Trump and Clinton. She got 1% of the vote. In what sort of math does 1 greater than 46 plus 48, which is the percentage of the vote that Trump and Clinton got respectively? In what world is 1 greater than 90, was it 94? And the conspiracy thinking goes even farther. See, the problem is, after Clinton stole the primaries from Bernie Sanders by having the audacity to get more votes in both caucuses and the popular votes that had them. And folks, I love Bernie Sanders. I voted for Bernie Sanders. I was a big Bernie Sanders backer. He didn't win enough black votes in the states where he needed them. Whether they were right or wrong in that, it's a fact. But the third party voters, the super progressive types, do not like the reality of the American political system, which is we have a first past the post voting system. You get 5 horses in the race. Whichever horse at the end of the race, whichever horse is the farthest ahead, wins. Now, in a 5-horse race, that means that one horse could win with 21% of the vote. Mathematically speaking, it is possible for one of the horses to win in a 5-horse race with 21% of the vote. And we've seen plurality winners. Hell, Donald Trump's a plurality winner. He only had 46% of the vote. Bill Clinton was a plurality winner with just 43% of the vote. And the reason why the third party thing is a non-starter is math. It's simple game theory. In this type of political system, there will be 2 major parties. Now, today, they're called Democrats and Republicans. Before, they were called Federalists and Democratic Republicans. There were Whigs at one point in the mix somewhere. 1,000 years from now, it might be the Yangs and the Combs arguing about the E Plebnista. Obscure Star Trek reference. There you go. But it's always going to be 2 parties because a first-past-the-post voting system ensures there will be 2 parties, because the minute a third party comes along, that is akin to one of the other two, it splits the votes of that party. We've seen it. This has been demonstrated throughout history over hundreds and hundreds of years of political science. It's such a reliable thing. It is a law. There's very few things in political science that are called laws, right? Because political science is very vague, abstract, social science-y kind of stuff, right? Lots of shifting variables, but there's one of the few things they call a law in political science. It's called Duverger's Law. Google it. D-U-V-E-R-G-E-R. Duverger's Law. Duverger's Law is a French political scientist who recognized that when you have a first-past-the-post system, a winner-takes-all system, a one-man, one-vote, one-representative-type democracy like what we got, you will get two parties. And full stop. End of sentence. End of paragraph. Send the telegraph. We're done. That's what you get. That's the system you have. Now, if you've got a two-party system and you're bitching, oh, my God, we need third parties. Why can't third parties? You sound like someone who's complaining why they can't use their hockey stick at the baseball field. You are the person in the football helmet showing up on the basketball court. You're not even playing the same damn game. Now, this whole third-party thing, it would be refreshing if, say, they had any elected officials anywhere in the country. Quick, name the highest ranking Green Party official in the United States. Quick, name the highest ranking Libertarian Party official in the United States. None of them are even at the level of state governor. You might find a handful of city councilmen somewhere. Maybe a lot of California for the Greens there. And these are for parties that have been around for decades. I think Libertarian goes back to the 30s, Green goes back to the 70s, or vice versa, but decades these parties have been around, haven't been able to get elected to much more than dog catcher. If everybody just votes for Jill Stein, then it'll all be good. If everybody won't even vote for the Green mayor, and you want to jump in all of a sudden to the Green president. Duverger's Law, folks, it's a two-party system. Now, in that two-party system, you can have effect of, you can affect change. You can move the two parties. The Republican Party is the perfect example of this. Look how far to the right the Republican Party has moved. You want to see something interesting? Go Google 1956 Republican platform. Like the Eisenhower Republican platform. It was like, you know, full vacations for people, you know, guaranteed health care. It was like liberal as hell. And look how far to the right that party has moved. Now, how'd they get there? I mean, we're talking about a party, a Republican Party in the 50s, 60s, and 70s that was for gun control. That was passing gun control. We're talking about Richard Nixon, as odious as he was, who created the Environmental Protection Agency. So look how far right that party has become because of activists in the NRA who took it over and made it, you know, what it is today and forced a completely new constitutional vision of what the Second Amendment means that's radically altered American society. Ronald Reagan coming in, the morning in America, the Tea Party radically reshaped what the Republican Party is. And to its detriment, the Democratic Party's been reshaped from the inside, unfortunately, to the right. I don't disagree with that point. That the Democratic Party is far to the right of where it should be. Where I disagree is in this tactic of how to change it. If your tactic of how to change it is to run some sacrificial lamb Green candidate every 4 years, or to pine for some independent run, I mean, it's cute, it's sentimental, it's awfully refreshing. But I had people in 2016... late in the election season, like we're going into October and November, right? We're hearing the pussy grabbing comments from Donald Trump, right? We're at that stage where we know, oh my God, Donald Trump could actually fucking win this thing. And I had people telling me to vote for Jill Stein when polls were showing she was at 1 or 2%. And had been at 1 or 2% since, you know, the beginning of the season. What kind of fool do you think I am to think that, oh yeah, she's going to jump from one to like 50 in a week? I mean, if there'd been some movement, if she'd increased from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16, hey, there's something happening here. But no, throw my vote away. Go ahead and not vote for the one person who's got, according to the polls, the one possible chance to divert this nightmare. Don't vote for her because of the other type of thinking that we get out of the far fringe, wacky left wing. The idea that the parties are the same. Both parties, they're just the same. They're exactly the same. They're the corporate duopoly. There's no difference whatsoever between Democrats and Republicans. They're both destroying the planet. They both start wars. They both bomb women and children. They both support the drug war. They both support pharmaceutical industry. Okay, sure. Let's pretend Democrats and Republicans are exactly alike on war and the environment. They're exactly alike on bombing women and children. They're both exactly alike when it comes to the corporate oligopoly. Can I at least have the party that's not so anti-gay? The one that's not so afraid of black people? The one that actually thinks their lives matter? If they're both going to be destroying the planet at an equal pace, can we at least have the friendlier one? This is such an insane fallacy. This idea, and it comes, oh, yeah, voting for the lesser of two evils. You're just voting for the lesser of two evils. Yeah! If I'm presented with two evils, my job is to ensure the greater one does not succeed. What is wrong with that? Why would you support doing anything that helps the greater evil win? Like splitting votes among lesser evils.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I smell pot coming from over here and grilled onions from over there. Two of my favorite smells ever.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
This is Radical Russ Belville with a word about dealing with police. Whether marijuana is legal in your state, whether you're a medical marijuana patient, or whether you're a cannabis consumer just trying to survive under prohibition, you should always affirmatively assert your rights in a police encounter. This means you don't answer police questions without your attorney present, and you never consent to a search. Police are not your friend. Besides showing your insurance, registration, and driver's license, there are only three things you should be saying and one thing you should be doing. I cannot answer further questions without my attorney present. I do not consent to any searches. Am I under arrest or am I free to go? And then leave once you've been cleared to go. Don't stick around for any little talks the officer wants to have. Learn this lesson well, and unlike me, you won't have a criminal record.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z, Cannabis Kamikaze.
Shanna, your Hector David, P.K.A. Dirtball.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. And hey, While I get heated about these discussions, do you know that I love each and every one of you, right? It's just my nature. I get heated about stuff. I strongly believe what I believe. I'd rather be strongly wrong than weakly right. But it doesn't mean I don't like you. In fact, I love you. You give me content. Thank you very much for the inspiration. Because it reminds me of something I got through my social media feeds, probably Facebook. It was a graphic. Came from American News X. And the graphic says, 1968, Humphrey wasn't good enough for the leftist progressives, so they got Nixon. 1980, Carter wasn't good enough for the leftist progressives, so they got Ronald Reagan. 2000, Gore wasn't good enough for the leftist progressives, so they got George W. Bush. 2016, Hillary wasn't good enough for the leftist progressives, so they got Trump. As a dog returneth to his vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. End quote. It rings so true to me because I was on that side. I was on that fringe, far left side. I've been there. I've been to the mountaintop and over the left side of it. And I actually espoused a view for a long time that was, we got to teach them a lesson. Why? We got to show them Democrats. They can't expect us to vote for them if they don't follow our exact ideals about how far left they should be. My God, we got to teach them a lesson. We got to show them. Once they see that they lose and they don't get our votes, they'll come running to our side. Well, that graphic, that little meme, explains exactly that didn't happen. I mean, at least in my lifetime, right? When I barely remember Ted Kennedy challenging Jimmy Carter from the left in 1980. But I very intensely remember 2000 with Al Gore. And it's just this idea, you know, that it was the Nader Raiders that were coming out to vote for Nader, right? And I got to show Gore. He's too corporate. He's a corporate Dem. There's no difference between Gore and Bush. No difference at all. They're both corporate. We got to vote for Nader. Nader gets like 4%, and it's close enough that Gore loses the recount in Florida and blah, 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 right? Now, does anyone think that President Gore would have ignored the August 6th presidential daily briefing that bin Laden's determined to attack in the United States? Does anyone think that after being attacked in the United States, President Gore would have attacked the country that had nothing to do with that attack? Does anyone think that President Gore would have let people drown in New Orleans under Hurricane Katrina? They don't think President Gore wouldn't have been embarking the United States on serious reforms to rein in global climate change way back in the 2000s? I mean, this theory that they're both the same does not seem to be proven in reality. Yes, there's bad on both sides. Yeah, sure. Hell, I didn't like Obama being, you know, getting the green light to assassinate American citizens or wiretapping us or not prosecuting torturers or all sorts of things about Obama I didn't like. But God, I knew I liked him better than George W. Bush and Mitt Romney and John McCain. This idea that they're just both the same is just insane when you look at the history. You look at when we get Republican presidents, we get these, you know, the budget gets busted and people go without and social programs are harmed and people of color and other people, marginalized people, are left further behind. I've seen it. I've seen history. I've seen it in my lifetime. I'm 50 now. I see good things generally happen under Democrats and bad things generally happen under Republicans. Of course, I'm, you know, poor. So if I were rich, maybe I'd have a different view. But it leads me to this thinking that, you know, this lesser of two evils just keeps enabling, you know, this idea that you can't vote for the lesser of the two evils. You got to vote for a third good or something, however that metaphor works out, isn't borne out in my lifetime. Every time there's been a major third-party candidate, it has helped a Republican get elected, except for the case of Bill Clinton when Ross Perot pulled some of the vote from George H.W. Bush. man, we got in 2018, 2020, we've got to get control. Trump is fascism, I'm telling you.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Bourbon here at Delta 9 House and Studios. I'm Radical Russ Belville. Check me out at RadicalRuss.com. Subscribe online at MJAgenda.com. Become a patron and get all sorts of VIP goodies. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.